You're listening to the Fear-Free Childbirth Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Alexia Leachman. Let me help you to take the fear out of pregnancy, birth and beyond with a mix of real-life stories and experts sharing their wisdom. I'll also be sharing psychology insights to help you to cultivate a fearless mindset. Be inspired and be empowered with Fear-Free Childbirth. And now it's time for the show. Hello and welcome back to the Fear-Free Childbirth podcast. My name is Alexia Leachman. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, on today's show, I'm going to be diving into the topic of solo parenting and being a working mother. I'm going to be joined by Steph, and Steph used to be the managing director of a creative agency in the UK when she decided she wanted to embark on a solo parenting journey. Now, I was really interested to understand how her pregnancy was and what that meant for a birth experience, knowing this is going to be a solo journey. She agreed to come on the show, and our conversation goes way beyond that. Her daughter is now a toddler that runs about the place and needs quite a lot of care, obviously, like most toddlers. We discuss what it's like to be a working mother with a young child that's not yet at school, but also what that's meant for her professional life. For many of us, when we become mothers, it does put into question a lot of the stuff that we do for our work and whether we can maintain the full-time job that we had before, whether that's something that we want to continue doing. But of course, when you're facing the solo parenting journey, that adds a whole new dimension to thinking all of that. And so this is what we're going to be exploring today.
Hello, Stephanie. Welcome to the Fear-Free Childbirth podcast.
Hello. Lovely to speak to you.
I know. I'm really excited to dive into this conversation because, well, we've known each other for quite a long time. And we tried to figure out this at the beginning, but I don't know. Let's just say it's over 10 years.
Yes.
And in that time, you've had a stratospheric marketing career. And more recently, you've become a mama to a little girl. And I've observed you from, you know, all the socials, seeing your life unfold as a solo mama. And so I really wanted to get you on the show to talk about your experience of solo parenting and what that's been like for you so that we can get a new perspective on the show to hear how being a solo parent, how that works, how it feels, what the struggles are and all of that. So how about we dive into sort of the beginning of the story for you?
It actually started quite out of context. I was in my late 20s and I was feeling a bit funny. So I went to the doctors. I was like, not quite feeling myself. They did a couple of blood tests, went for a couple of scans, and accidentally I discovered that I had a brain tumor, and it was low grade, benign. And I was kind of kept on kind of regular scans and things like that. But they just said to me, if you experience any other kind of major symptoms, they might be things like seizures. But that was kind of like the kind of like initial starting point for where this story goes. So that was 2009, I think. And then hit about 2014, so about 5 years on, I had a first seizure. And then I had two more 6 months later. That meant technically I was now epileptic. With epilepsy, my neurologist turned around to me and said, are you thinking of having children? And I was like, well, I'm kind of, how old am I now? Early 30s. Well, yeah, it would be quite nice. But he's like, well, don't. He's like, it's a risk to you and it's a risk to your child. So you're probably going to miscarry, or worse still, you could die yourself.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, right. Wasn't expecting to have that conversation. It was completely, there's something that kind of like shook me, and I had to kind of take a step back and just absorb everything that was going on. And so for the next couple of years, I basically grieved parenthood, and I sat there and was like, well, what can I do about this? Don't know. So I threw myself into my career. I'd already been kind of traveling quite a lot because with a brain tumor, although it was benign and it was safe, I didn't know like when that was going to change or if that was going to change. So I kind of been off traveling and doing my thing. And I got a letter through the post. I'd love the NHS do. I do love the NHS, but they're terrible with their timings on things. Letter came through from the epilepsy specialist saying, oh, you've got an appointment. So I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And he did all the routine kind of, how are you feeling? Have you had any symptoms? Have you had any seizures? Are you taking medication? Oh, yes, yes, yeah, all fine, good, good. And he said, have you got any questions? And I said, well, actually, yes. I was like, I was told a few years ago that I could not, or should not, have a child myself because I have all these risks. I could die, I could miscarry, whatever. And he just looked at me and was like, no. He's like, I don't know who told you that, but you have just as good a chance as any to kind of like to become pregnant, to have a safe pregnancy. You're on the lowest dose of medication. So what are you waiting for? And I was like, are you sure? Like, you know, really? Like, what's going on here? And by this time, I'm 37. So this journey started at 29. We're nearly 10 years on. I'm still single. That's a bit of a practical issue. Yeah. But also, you know, like, my mother was in early menopause. So, you know, where do I sit on this spectrum? What do I do? Decided to get a bit of an MOT. I went to a fertility clinic and kind of like went through all the motions of getting tested and all that. And my my summary that came out of it was, you have a womb of a 25-year-old. Pretty kicking. I was like, you know, when you get your Fitbit and you see and it says, oh, actually, you're this 25-year-old. That's not bad. And then the woman turned around to me and went, if I was you, I'd just go out on Friday night and see what happens. Like, it's a lot cheaper. So I was like, well, okay, thanks. But the 25-year-old thing basically said to me, you don't have to rush. Like, you're 37, but just kind of like take your time. And so I did, and I waited a little bit longer. Basically, I'd gone up and done, I became a yoga teacher in the meantime. I was doing that as a side hustle. I was running the agency, communications agency.
You were running like MD of a communications agency and you had a side hustle. Like,
I literally would fill all my time because I was just like, oh, I don't have a relationship. I've got this. I'm just like, what can I do? So I was always doing something. But I think also it was a big distraction because the more I filled my time, the less back I could think about stuff. I did come to some kind of realization that something needed to shift because I went and sought out a life coach and had a good chat with her. One of the first things, you'll laugh because we just talked about vision boarding, but one of the first things she got me to do was a vision board, and I had all sorts of things on there, like travel and work and love and all that kind of thing. But right in the middle was this big baby picture. She's like, talk to me about that bit. And that basically made me kind of go back and go, right, okay, I need to start doing this. What do I need to do? Like, I need to think about the practical side of things, the financial side of things, the work implications, the can I physically do this, emotionally do this? I kickstarted my journey. I started looking for donors and kind of getting everything moving and finding the right clinics and things like that. And
your vision board, it had a baby on it. It didn't have a couple or a family. Is that right? You made that call.
Yeah, there's one. I mean, I posted about this on Instagram recently and someone like laughed at me because, you know, some people look at the pictures and some people don't. And she'd zoomed in and she's like, hot Spanish guy. Lol. And I was like, yeah, there was a guy. Like, that would be nice. But the baby was much bigger. And yeah, right. I was just like, by the time I kind of found somebody, got into a relationship, done everything, I am notoriously single. Like, I've always been single. Like, I've dated here and there, but just nothing's ever really stuck. And that, how do you rush into a relationship in your late 30s and go, hi, I'm Steph. You look really nice. Yeah, exactly. Tick, 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 tick. And I was, you know, all the time I was still kind of in the back of my mind, like, maybe things will change, you know, you don't know, but like, I have to go with plan A and then see what else happened. And, you know, my plan B was always if it didn't work out, I'd look to adopt. I'd had this big focus that I was like, well, if my mum could raise three kids on her own and I didn't do the greatest of jobs of it, but I turned out all right, then I'm sure I can do it.
Just talk me through some of that thinking that you had as you were kind of contemplating this as a route for you.
The first big thing was, can I physically do it? That was the major, major one there. You can't see on the inside of your body. And so there is this kind of like, if I put all my eggs in my one basket, am I going to come out of this emotionally okay and like emotionally stable? I was quite convinced that I would, but I think it was just pure grit and determination around that side of things. From the financial side, I was like, well, I'm in a good job, so that's fine. And I'll just come back after, you know, I've had the baby, and I'll have to be practical about that because, you know, it's only going to be one income, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Other women do it. Bit of a blind spot, if I'm totally honest. But again, I think I had to kind of put the green lights on as many things as possible, because if I didn't, I would have backed away from it. And then from the practical side of things, like, you know, I was living in a one-bedroom flat. I'm still living in a one-bedroom flat with a two-year-old. But I was like, that's fine. I'll just get a bigger place when the time comes. And so there were there was lots of planning, but it was also lots of, let's work that out when we get to that bit, because it might not even happen.
What were the practical things? What did that look like then, practically?
I went to a fertility clinic. And they do a series of tests to kind of like check all sorts of things functionally around your body. So things for like checking that your tubes are clear, there's no blockages, making sure that your hormone levels are as they should be, all that kind of jazz. And then you basically go in, you take bloods, you check your ovulation, like make sure you know, like everything's kind of like working as it should be. And you have like a whole process at the start of it, which is like a full MOT in that sense. And then when it comes round to actually kind of like going through the process, like choosing which method that you use is really quite important. For me, even though I was told I had a womb of a 25-year-old, like just a few years before, they do a test called AMH to check your levels, which is an indicator of how many eggs that you might have left. Depending on which clinic you go to, they've got different scales. But the major one that I was on was 0 to 30 was the score. 30 was like, you are prime. And 0 was like, yeah, fat chance. My AMH levels were 0.3.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. So whether my womb was 25 years old, my eggs were certainly not. So there was a high risk there of kind of like obviously not conceiving. You take your chances and see what's going on. But my complication on top of that is I have high prolactin levels, which is what triggered me to discover the fact that I had the brain tumor all those years before. In order to conceive, I needed to take medication to kind of like bring my hormone levels down. But IVF was off the cards because were they to extract eggs from me, I think it's likely they could do that and they'd all be gone and I wouldn't have a chance. I'd have one shot and that would be it. They recommended me a process called IUI, which is in utero insemination. But straight up, like if you're talking to a guy, the easiest way to describe it is like a cow, turkey baster, you know. But it means you don't have to have all the injections and the hormones and all those kind of things. So it's literally a case of tracking your bloods, tracking your ovulation. Like as soon as you kind of hit that button, you go in and you have the procedure. And then it's a watch and wait. Obviously, you'll get the natural indicator if it doesn't work. But if they think it might, you can't take, they advise you not to take a test for the first sort of like 2.5 weeks, just to kind of be 100% sure. I didn't have the greatest experience in the first clinic, but the second one, incredible doctor, got a network of people that I know who've been to him, who've had success, which is really, really good. Put my trust in him. I was like, let's see how this goes. And I did one round just before lockdown, unsuccessful. Went in for another round in the August and my womb lining wasn't thick enough. So I had to abandon. And then the last one, I'd already kind of primed myself with the idea of kind of like going into adoption. But that one was the successful one. From a practical level stuff, yeah. So I went down the IUI route. But also there's picking the donor, which is like...
Talked about that, yeah. That's my next question. In my head, I'm probably way off base here. Was it like a catalogue with loads of pictures or was it...
It's all online, yes. So it is like a catalogue with lots of pictures, but it's kind of like a super advanced version of a dating app, except they're all child pictures. So that sounds really dark and twisted when I say that out loud. But basically the donors will offer up on many of the profiles pictures of themselves when they're children or babies, so you can get an indicator of their features and things like that. So it's like a database of everything to do, then their age, their height, their weight, their health, their family health, any conditions they might have, their features, their interests. They do a personality test, sometimes they do voice notes. So it's quite a minefield when you start going in. If there's anybody listening that is thinking about kind of like going down this route as well, one of the big pieces of advice that I had was to check and see if those donors have already had pregnancies, because obviously that's a high indicator of success. They might be more likely to be able to conceive using that donor. And even down to things like other bits of advice that I can't give you kind of a solid evidence behind, but things like don't pick people who look like you, because actually sometimes nature fights against that. So if you're looking kind of like to like a picture perfect, it's like, well, there's too many of that already. So like, we don't want to make any more of that. But again, that's a hypothetical.
Did you get to see their grades, like whether or not they were smart?
You get to see kind of like an idea, like so like their kind of academic history, their interests. They do like a little questionnaire around them, things like that. So that I actually used three different donors over my kind of like time. First one, I was kind of dead set on. I can't remember too many details about him now, but I was like, yeah, he sounds cool. Second one, I was like, that'll do, because I was in a hurry to kind of get it done, and I was on the clock, as it were. And then the last one, I was really, really overconsidered, and I'm really pleased I was, because that was the one that was successful. But things that were big factors for me were making sure that whoever the donor was, their heritage had to be something that I could teach my daughter about later. Like making sure that I wasn't going for somebody who was purely from Vietnam or America or Scotland or wherever. If I didn't know enough about the history of that place or enough to be able to share with them, I didn't want to kind of like deny them part of their culture. And actually the person I chose has mixed heritage to the degree that my daughter has 8 different parts of her kind of like thing. So from Puerto Rican to Korean to Scottish, which is a real mixed bag, which is lovely because I didn't know what she was going to look like when she came out, because I've got mixed heritage too in the kind of like a tiny way. My grandfather is from Centralina, and so his father is from Africa. And so we've got kind of mixed genetics in my family. My brother's very dark, I'm very fair. I didn't know what was going to come out of that, but I've got loads of places I can take her to travel now.
Do you know who he is, or is there anonymity there?
So there's an option to say whether you're open to being contacted. And then at the kind of, I think it's 18, my daughter can contact the agency and say, I'd like to be in touch with my donor dad, and he can do the same. And if they both request, then they will be able to be put in touch.
Okay.
So it's not kind of like tomorrow I can go and contact him, and he's kind of given up rights by kind of making his donation. He's not technically her father as a dad figure, but he is biologically her father.
When you found out you were pregnant, like, you know, how was that pregnancy experience for you?
Okay, so I remember coming home from the clinic, having done the insemination, and getting on the phone to my friend saying, yep, it's all good, it went ahead this time. And she went, oh my God, you're pregnant. And I went, no, that's not how it works. There's still a bit of work to be done here. It was only about less than a week after I had it done, I literally sat down and went, I need red onion now. And I ran to Waitrose, dropped everything I was doing at work, just ran to Waitrose, chopped up a raw red onion, threw it in a plain baguette, and just ate the whole thing. And I was like, I think I might be pregnant. And I was like, that's like, I'm sure cravings are supposed to come later. But it was obviously this surge of something within me that needed it. So I did a pregnancy test a couple of days later, and it was so, so faint. And then I did one every single day until the day I was told I was actually allowed to do it. I was very vocal as soon as it happened, because I wanted to kind of tell the world and shout from the rooftops, even though people say you mustn't, you've got to wait. But I was like, I just want to embrace it, because in my head, I wanted to manifest that this would be a positive pregnancy. The first trimester was really exhausting. I had a few things with like sense of smell and stuff like that went a bit funny, but I was really lucky I didn't have nausea or anything like that. I just really struggled. Like some days it would be 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, I have to sign off work. I was like, I'm sorry, I cannot keep my eyes open. So really, really draining. But I was pregnant at 39. I turned 40 when I was about 16 weeks pregnant.
Okay.
And so in the NHS system, suddenly everything changes. And suddenly you're a high risk, and suddenly you're geriatric mom,
yeah.
And you like you have to take aspirin and you have to do this, and all of a sudden all these extra kind of dates and schedules had to be put in. Generally, I was pretty healthy through my pregnancy. I think the only real major struggle I had was a bit of pelvic girdle pain, which kind of knocked me for 6. I couldn't stand up off the chair quick enough.
That's so painful. I couldn't walk to the toilet. It was awful.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
I'd have people like buzzing at the flat door, and I'm like, I can't get to you. I'm sorry.
I'm staying right here. But that's it. I'm just thinking like that pregnancy experience. I mean, you're on your own. You're living on your own. So when I was in my first trimester, I was exhausted. I kept going back to bed. I was like, I've got no energy. I can't get out of bed. And people had to bring me bananas in bed so I could eat them in bed, get the energy, and then leave the bed. But you're on your own. So already this solo journey is beginning. I mean, how are you feeling going through all of this, thinking, well, there's no one there for me to to get me a banana. Well, that was my thing, the banana, but do you know what I mean? How was that for you?
This is a really good point, and it's a really interesting one because two things are going on here. So one, like I said, I've been eternally single. I live far away from family. Like I'm always somebody who's just got on with stuff on my own. Like even I remember a friend saying to me once, oh, so who's picking you up from the airport when you get back from X trip? And like, why is someone going to pick me up from the airport? So it wouldn't occur to me. I'd just get home. Like I'd already got there, so I'd just get home again. I've just always done things by myself. The second thing is, we're in the midst of a pandemic. Pregnant in October, by December we were back in lockdown again. So I was just at home doing my thing. Like that's just how it was.
Yeah.
So yeah, if I was tired or I had to go to a hospital appointment, it was actually quite nice because the tubes were really quiet. So you could go and do all those things. And there were lots of rule changes happening as well at the time around having somebody accompany you to appointments. So obviously I didn't have a partner to take with me to them, but all the rule changes happened just a little bit behind where I was in my stage of my pregnancy. So I remember taking a friend with me to my 20-week scan, which is obviously pretty major because I was like, actually, if there's anything, this would be really nice to have someone there just in case there's not great news. And she got sent away because she wasn't my partner and because there wasn't enough waiting room space to have an extra person in there. That was the only time I got thrown a little bit, because I'd had my hope that I would have someone with me, but otherwise I just got on with it. And I had another friend who requested to be my birth partner, which was nice. And she kind of like did the NTT classes with me from, she was living in Dublin at the time, so she did that remotely with me as well. So I had a bit of support there. It all kind of went pretty well until I think it was probably about 32 weeks. And then I had a scan to check on the size of the baby and they freaked me out because they're like, oh, she's too small. She's not growing. Like I was just like, oh, what does that mean? Oh, well, I can't really talk about that here. And it's that fear of suddenly going like, what is wrong? Like, is the placenta not feeding the baby? Is there a complication? Is it because I'm old? What have I done? The guilt, like I'm like, what's happening here? I spoke to someone else 2 days later and she was just like, I hate it when they do that in that scan room. They always do that and they freak people out. She's fine. She's a bit on the small side, but she's fine.
I'm mad for you. You come across as somebody that's just like super gung-ho. I'm just going to sort this out. I'm going to like take on the world and I'm just going to do it and I'm not scared of anything. And so I'm kind of thinking, and so correct me if I'm wrong, you know, that you're looking at the birth, and this is fine. I'm just going to nail this. Because I nail everything else, this is going to be totally fine. Is that how you felt about birth? I mean,
I was a little bit nervous, but I think because my mum was late with her, with me, and then I think most of us, we were pretty kind of like late going. I was like, I've got time. Like, I've got time to kind of worry about this if I need to. Then also because I was my age, they offered me induction. And I was like, oh, okay, I can plan for that. I'm in control of the date that this baby arrives. Obviously then kind of like understanding what induction meant and versus what kind of like the reality of that was, a little bit more kind of anxious as the kind of like scans went on to check on my daughter, because we knew she was small, the kind of like option of induction was kind of like, no, this is pretty definitive. We need to make sure she's out by 39 weeks. That got brought forward by a week and it was only complicating to me of my life because I decided to take on a mini MBA before the baby came. And I was like, it's fine, it'll be finished a week or two just before that I go and do my induction, so I know when the baby's coming, I know what's gonna happen. Week 38, I'm sat there, I've gone in, I've tidied all my house up the best I could, get everything ready, and I'm sitting there typing on my laptop finishing my last project for my mini MBA. and then I think it was the third attempt of induction, I told them no. Basically I had two that I started and had to stop because overnight, because of my epilepsy, they wouldn't allow you to continue with something in case something happens and there weren't enough people around to deal with it. So I did one, didn't work. Second one, I did the balloon, which was really not fun and quite uncomfortable, but it triggered contractions. And so I was like, okay, this is it, it's working. But then they stopped. And so we had to stop that again. And then the third one, they came in and like, right, we're going to do epidural. And I was just like, I'm not going to have an epidural because I want to be in control of a situation. Like, I don't like feeling out of control. That stresses me out. I don't want to push too soon or, you know, do whatever. And so I was like, I'm really sorry, I've been in here 3 days. I really want a cesarean. And they were just like, well, it's really risky and da da da. And they went through the whole thing. I was like, you're telling me I shouldn't be stressed out. This what would not stress me out is to have this procedure, have the baby here. The baby's not going to be stressed. I'm not going to be stressed. And my friend chipped in and went, you heard what she said, get it done. And they went, okay, have you eaten anything? And I went, I've had 2 slices of pineapple. They're like, okay, we need to wait 6 hours. It was the best decision I made. It was most calm a way to bring her into the world. And I had the whole Lion King experience, which for anybody who doesn't know is you've got this sheet up in front of you so you can't see what's going on at the other end. And then they lift the baby up into the air and kind of present her to you. They were like, do you want the Lion King? I was like, I don't know what you mean. And then they're like,
ta-da! Oh, brilliant.
And she came out and she was really healthy. She wasn't as small as they thought she was going to be. She was 7'4", I think. It was a harder recovery because, again, you come home, you're on your own, you've got to kind of wiggle around and do everything. Being in control, I think a lot of people look at me and go, you don't really know what labour was like, do you? I don't know what labour was like. I know what it was like to birth a child, but I don't know what labour was like because I never experienced it. Do I regret that? No. I know that sounds awful, but I made the best decision that for me.
I can't believe people would say that to you, though. Like, it just, everyone's journey is unique and you've got to do the right thing for you. And so what if you've not experienced that part of the experience, you know?
And now, let's take a quick commercial break.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com by the end of January and get 15% off any of our award-winning supplements. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And now, back to the show.
When was she born then? What week was she? Did you end up having that cesarean?
So she was born 13th of June. So it was just before Freedom Day in the UK. So everybody was just coming out of lockdown, officially in that summer and celebrating, which was fine for them to go and party. But it was brilliant for me because it meant that people could come and see her. Whereas if I'd have had her sooner, then if we were still in lockdown, it would have been much more tricky to kind of do that. And so, yeah, it was really hot outside. And obviously, the hospitals are always really hot anyway. So it was melting.
I think about the journey that you've been on already, taking her in your arms for the first time. I mean, just what was that like?
It was amazing. I mean, they put her on my chest, and kind of I'm just looking at her and just smiling, and my friends like caught these beautiful pictures of us encountering each other for the first time.
Yeah.
And she's just like, why aren't you crying? I was like, because I feel like I've known her my entire life. I was like, it's not like I'm meeting someone new, and I'm so happy, but it's not a kind of an emotional release or an overwhelm, I think, because I wasn't exhausted, and so that didn't kind of like trigger lots of emotions that to come up. Because if I'm perfectly honest, like I said, I am a crier, so I think everyone was really blown away by the fact I was just so calm. This is it, she's here. And then she just slid down my chest, and I couldn't control it because I'd had an epidural after the C-section, and I was like, can somebody help me, she's strangling me. And then she obviously went away to kind of be cleaned up and everything. And then I got taken off to my room, and the one of the kind of nurses came around. She's like, oh, he's so beautiful, isn't he? And I was like, she. He's like, yeah, he is. He's really gorgeous. She's so proud. I went, she. And she just looked at me and went, I filled the paperwork in wrong. I'm so sorry. I'll be back in a minute. I think she'd been so tired on her shift. I'm like, I'm so glad you came and talked to me, because otherwise I'd have had all sorts of admin problems.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But because I had to have an extra dose of medication to prevent seizure during birth, I had to stay in for a few extra days. So the C-section plus that, it meant I was in hospital for about 5 days. And then we came home, and yeah, and then just got on with things for the first week. We had the health visitor to check, and then we had to go back into hospital. So I thought I was going in just for a very quick kind of like once over, make sure she was okay. Her bilirubin levels were really low, and I had been breastfeeding, but actually there'd been no milk. And so she'd lost 20% of her body weight, and had to go under blue light for a couple of days. So I felt absolutely awful, because I was just like, I thought she was fine. I thought babies just slept because they were tired and that's what they did. But she was sleeping an awful lot more because she was so hungry. So I had about six, seven weeks of mixed formula and breastfeeding, and I almost gave up. I was just like, okay, that's just going to be it. We'll just do formula and so be it. And then it kicked in and she started refusing the formula. She's 25 months now and still breastfeeding. It is getting less. It was never where I expected to be. It's lovely in the sense that there's that connection and I can soothe her, and you know, she's comfortable with it, and I'm to the most part I am comfortable with it as well. It makes me uncomfortable when people aren't. That's a whole other conversation. But yeah, but after that she was fine. So that was the only kind of like hiccup.
Going through the first few months as a new mother, you know, on your own, and I know that you don't know any different, so it's difficult for you to compare, but I'm just wondering, what was those first few months like navigating this? Mine were like, you know, it's like, well, is she meant to do that? Do I need to feed? Like, you know, you don't know what the hell's going on, and just about to talk that through with somebody and go, well, I don't know, and you take it. And also just sharing responsibilities and getting night's sleep. I mean, how did you kind of manage that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I just did. She's very good. Well, obviously, once she got better as well, she is a very good sleeper. So I've always been very lucky with that. But newborn, those first few months, obviously they sleep every couple of hours, they need a feed or they need changing or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the biggest piece of advice that I give other people around this, whether they're solo or otherwise, when they're having children, because of my experience, is not to have expectations.
Mm.
I think there's a very big layer of pressure and guilt that we put upon ourselves to immediately bounce back or be this kind of like perfect super mum or dad. And to make sure that the baby's fitting in with the lifestyle that we had before. For me, it was just like, well, if I need to be awake at this time, I need to be awake at this time. And if I need to sleep at this time, I will sleep at this time. And if she pooped, we just get on with it. Like all of those things. There were times where she would cry and I would get very tired and emotional as well. But I think it's really strange because it feels like a sense of coming home, becoming a mum, in the sense that there are all these instincts that kicked in me. And I've been around kids a lot, like growing up and things like that. So things weren't entirely alien from that perspective. That said, I never changed a nappy until I had her, which is bizarre because I've been around so many kids. My mum was a childminder, like insane. But I think the biggest challenges were more the practical stuff outside of the actual mothering. It was more things like the admin and the paperwork and being turned away when I was trying to get her birth registered because I was 2 minutes late, even though I dragged myself out 6 weeks after having a C-section, had to walk half an hour down a road to be able to get to the place I needed to. And so I burst into tears because I was like, I can't believe you've just done that. So all of the kind of like the challenges and things that kind of happened, I had my NCT group and we had a little WhatsApp that would go and we kind of like check in with each other. But I think generally I was pretty lucky. And like I say, because I didn't have these expectations around anything and because I'm so accustomed to just having to get on with things, I think the challenges came more when I started to go back to work and I thought I was doing everything that I possibly could and everything was kind of back to normal. And I realized it was much more of a challenge than I was seeing.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, the mothering for me is something that feels the most normal thing in the world.
Mm.
But now the navigating kind of everything, how the world looks as a mother, is very strange. And that's the bit that I think I found the hardest out of all of this.
Yeah. Let's talk about that bit. And also just from the work perspective, you know, the position that you held at the time was a managing director of a comms agency, a very successful. I just keep remembering seeing you winning yet another award on there. You know, like you're really doing really well. And so, you know, coming from that to then having maternity leave, like how long did you take off work at that point? What were you planning to take off in terms of maternity leave?
Yeah, so I'd always kind of like planned on taking roughly about 6 months.
Okay.
There's a couple of things that kind of fall into that. There is the financial aspect,
yeah,
because you have maternity pay and then you go on to the tiny little amount that you get from the government, which is difficult to kind of manage. And also kind of like thinking about future as well. There's the kind of emotional connection with people as well. When you're doing things on your own and you're home alone and you're just with a baby that doesn't really talk back at that stage, actually having people to talk to is really nice.
Yeah.
And then like reclaiming that sense of self as well and proving, I think proving is probably a really interesting word actually, proving to others that you are still capable, even though it's only been a space of a few months. If there's an immediate reaction, you know, from whether it be peers or clients or whoever, of like, oh, you know, are you going to be okay with this? You know, have you got baby brain? All those kind of like terms and things like that come through. There was a need in me to make sure that people knew that I was still there. I hadn't gone away and I was still present. And also just making sure I was still integrated within a business that I was supposed to be running.
Mm. I mean, isn't it interesting how people suddenly jump to these conclusions the minute you've birthed a human? You've just created a whole human being and birthed it. Why am I now no longer capable of doing all the things I was doing before?
Yeah.
You know, it just seems to be, what a leap that people make. And I think even parents probably make that leap. Where does that come from, do you think? Have you had any thoughts about it? Have you got theories on why people behave in this way or think this?
Yeah, I think if I'm totally honest, there are definitely, your brain is filled up with a whole bunch of new responsibilities. You have a second and a third job. Like you've got to be the person you were before, the person who is a mother, the person you are that's convincing everybody that everything is normal. And so when your brain is at capacity, you do work at a slower pace. You're not as fast as you were before. Like, and I have to be honest and admit that. But equally, I'm not broken.
Mm.
And I think because everyone assumes you don't get any sleep, therefore you're always tired or you're not as available as you were. So I went from working full time, but working significant hours over the full time because that's just, I didn't have anything else. And when my yoga was stopped and my side hustle was gone, so these extra hours. So yeah, you kind of like find that you're finding your kind of way through all of that. It's a challenge.
The workplace, I mean, when I was in the workplace doing jobs in inverted commas, as opposed to working for myself, I just saw from where I was sitting that it just seemed like mothers. And it, I don't know why it was just mothers. The dads didn't seem to sort of, you know, get this as much at all. But the mothers just have a really hard time. You know, even those that are on part-time contracts that are kind of perfectly entitled to leave at 3 because that's what their contract says. They just get all the eye rolls around the office. Like, oh, can't organize a meeting at 4 because you won't be there. You know, like being really rude, actually.
Yeah.
And there's almost like a permission to treat people that are doing, you know, working parents that want that level of flexibility with disrespect or the fact that they can't do the work in the time that they have.
Yeah.
Did you find this kind of, I mean, you know, I feel that maybe that's a long time that I was in the workplace. I would have hoped that things have moved on slightly, but, you know, I know that there's some big campaigns around flexibility in the workplace and working parents. I don't know, like, what was it like for you? Did you experience some of that?
It's tricky because you're kind of like going from those kind of like extended hours to then kind of like a tiny amount. So I went back one day a week for the first couple of months, then 2 to 2.5 to 3 to 3.5. I built it up. But also I was juggling a whole new way of working. So we were all hybrid.
Right.
And so for me, that also meant I didn't have to commute. We were working flexi, so I could kind of work different hours around things. So I have become very adept at working on my mobile phone. So for my daughter Nat, I would be there and I was doing it. Even yesterday I was doing it. She's, you know, like I say, she's two. She was laying across my lap asleep. I'm kind of there on one phone, writing notes on my mobile phone, tapping on the left hand, like sending things on email. You work around those kind of things. But also sometimes she appears on screen because the meetings are not moved and you can't kind of like, you have to still participate. So I'd be on mute and then I kind of jump back on again. Or I'd be bouncing her to kind of get her to sleep while I'm on a call and put my laptop on top of the cat tree. And then your cat would walk over and the tail would swoosh on the top. And you'd have all these kind of funny scenarios, but I won't name them because they're, you know, they're clients, but some very big global clients congratulating me on the way that I was working and commending me on the fact that I had the courage to do it. And it was really, really nice to hear that because they have children themselves. Like one of them actually brought her daughter on and was like, look, come and see the baby. But it was just kind of like trying to work out that some things couldn't be moved, but I still need to participate in. Some things could be moved, but actually attitudes around not just me as the mum, even like sometimes just other people who are working part time for different reasons. Mm. You do get that kind of resentment that like you're not there. So somebody else is just going to have to pick that up. And it's something that really needs to shift and change in the workplace. And I know for women, especially in a time where more women are becoming leaders and there's more of a push to become a female leader and we're kind of, you know, championing these young girls. I talk about the fact that we're the Spice Girl generation, you know, I grew up in the 90s, you know, everyone's like, girl power, you can do this. But no one said to you, oh, by the way, when you have a baby, everything's going to change. And if you work from home and you're a stay-at-home mom, you're going to have a future that basically looks like your financials are going to drop, your prospects are going to drop, the way you're going to have to work is going to change. You're always going to have these school hours ahead of you. Like that is just not something that's kind of like pushed out there. And it's something that I didn't even think about naively, as it might have been. I thought I could do it all. And even with childcare, then I took the big decision and went, do you know what? I need to focus on doing something where I can still be that marketeer, that person who's doing that job. I can still kind of have control over the way I work and how I work without kind of anybody kind of making judgments, innocently or otherwise, around how I work and what I do, so that I can take that guilt and pressure off of myself. Mm. And it's been a real relief. Mm. It's not going to be perfect this first year because it is going to be a challenge, you know, financially and kind of getting things up and running. But at the same time, I'm getting to spend more time with my daughter than ever. I feel more myself and more like, you know, I'm coming back to being me and also being able to be me so my daughter sees that.
Yeah.
You know, but regardless of clients or otherwise, what I hated at one point was the fact that I would be picking her up from nursery and I just want to sleep or I'd be tired. And I'm like, I'm not giving her the person that I want to be. Mm-hmm. Somebody said to me the other day, you know, like, how can you live a life without compromise? And I was like, it's all about perspective. Choosing to say you compromise or choosing to optimize your life to get the things that you want out of things. Two very similar and different things.
Yeah.
But in your head, if you're saying, well, I can't do this anymore because of that, and you say, I can do this anymore because I've changed this, that's where you can kind of then focus psychologically on kind of having that way of being and relieve yourself of all those pressures that you've put on yourself.
And now, let's take a quick commercial break.
The station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now, back to the show.
First thing I want to say is I just commend you as well, just to have put another, you know, just to sort of hug you back and go brilliant as a woman leader doing all of that in the workplace. Because one thing that is very clear, it's you know, if the woman at the top, if the women in leadership positions are doing that, giving other women permission to do that too in the workplace, because it means that those other women working in that company are going to think, I can do that. That's okay. I can bring my child onto Zoom. That's okay. I can balance this. It shows that you can do it and acting as a role model. So that's just brilliant. And what impact that's going to have on those women in that workplace, even though you're no longer there.
Yeah.
The ripple effect. You've dropped that pebble in this pond now, and that's been done. And they now know that they can do that. So just acknowledge that in yourself, you know, because I think it's really important that women in those positions do kind of take that on. The other thing as you're talking as well, I recently moved from the UK to France. And one thing that's really striking to me is when I had two toddlers, juggling with the school pickup, nursery, you know, just dealing with all of that and work, it's impossible to have a full-time job and pick up your kids from school. I mean, there's just that they just don't work because school finishes at 3 or 3:30, or you're dropping them off at 9. I mean, so there's no way that you can do a 9 to 5, and that's if you work just 9 to 5. And you and I mean, the industry that I was in, which is marketing as well, 9 to 5 is a joke. You don't do that. It's way more than that, right? So the idea of being able to to have a child at school and have a full-time job, they're just mutually exclusive. It doesn't work. Somebody's got to give up. There's got to be compromise made somewhere. Even getting back for nursery hours was a challenge.
Yeah.
And now I've come to France. I'm dropping off my kids at 8:20 at school. I'm picking them up at 5. Every school, we've moved around France 3 times since we came here. Every school had a what they call a garderie, which is like childcare, available to every parent for €1 a day, where you can leave your kids there.
Wow.
Till 7:30. And I could drop her off at 7 if I wanted and leave her there till 7:30. And so if I'm running late, I'm caught in traffic, whatever it is, someone's there, which means everybody can just go back to work and have that life. And there's loads of really adequate, good, well-priced childcare for the times when you're not working, whereas nursery in the UK was just, your salary basically goes on nursery. You either, somebody's got to give up their job, haven't they?
Yeah.
And so they isn't set up for parents. And when I come to France, I see, I was like, wow, they really are supporting that. And so I think that really does lend itself to being able to cope as a parent. And I'm just seeing the differences now. And I think, God, if I'd had that in the UK, I probably would have stayed in the workplace and not set up a business or whatever it is. Whereas as I chose to leave the workplace, because I could see that on the horizon, That's exactly what you've done in the workplace, and losing brilliant women because they're not supporting them in being mothers.
Yeah.
Because mothers are just, when I think about what you're achieving, like your level of productivity and efficiency and ability to multitask is off the scale. You know, doing an MBA, let's just quickly get that MBA before giving birth. Workplaces need that kind of thing, right? They need that. And then they're just letting them go, letting women go, like you go. And I just think it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
So I had to go on a soapbox.
No. It's a big issue in the industry, like especially in marketing and comms. And there's a new organization called PR Mums that set up a new site, which is dedicated to recruitment and getting women back into the space, because male leaders are recognizing it as much as female leaders. You know, that they're losing their top talent. Mm. And so like, how can they kind of make sure they're supporting people? So there's lots of kind of things like Pregnant Men Screwed in the UK is like, you know, big movement to kind of helping working moms and doing different things. There's the big Flex Appeal campaign that's been launched recently and changed.
Yeah.
The miscarriage kind of like laws that are changing as well, thanks to Minding Class. There's lots of big, big things that are going on right now that are unbelievable. And having spoken to a friend at the weekend whose kids are just starting secondary school now, it would have been completely different for me. Like I had to become a stay-at-home mom. I had to do these things. Like the world is changing for the better, but it's still in its infancy to a very large degree. And so there is a lot of work to be done. You know, at the moment, like I have the blessing of being able to kind of like, if you say work, social media is 24/7. So 7 a.m, 6 a.m, if I'm up early, I can get in there and like be DMing the influencers and asking for their stuff, and they're online because they're posting their content and it's great. And I'm like, oh, hello. Yeah, we can have a chat now. That's fine. So actually there are a lot of benefits to being able to work flexibly. And I think the respect for that, it will only come from somebody who is in that experience. Mm. And I think the other point, going back to the workplace stuff as well, is just because I became a parent and my world shifted and changed and I chose to work in a different way and I had to put boundaries in place, it was something that I recognized quite quickly, and I was very keen to impress onto other people who weren't. So people who were like in their early career, 23, 24, 25, and thinking they had to work long hours and thinking they had to do X, Y, and Z, and they're responsible for everything. I'm like, no, you're being paid to do this job. This is what you need to do. We've got flexible working hours. If you want to shift and change and do that, fine. But you don't need to work overtime. You don't need to do this. It's perfectly okay. But because they didn't have an anchor to kind of like put in their mind that actually that was the right thing to do, it's the thing that also then long-term creates a resentment, because I was the person who used to roll their eyes at the person who would go home early to pick up their child. I did it.
Oh, I did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't realise, that's the thing, we don't realise until we become a mother what it's like.
Yeah.
It's just the biggest mind blown.
Yeah.
You know, the minute you become a mum, the whole world, your whole view of everything, everything just changes in a way that you can't even imagine before you become a parent. And so, yeah, I'll put my hand up and say I was one of those people too.
Yeah.
And so how do we change that attitude in the workplace when it is, I wouldn't consider myself to be a mean person. But maybe I was super mean when I was like in my 20s, I don't know. But the way that you change as a mother is just, you can't prepare for that. I don't think anybody, you could read as many books as you like about it, but
yeah,
nothing quite prepares you for what happens when you become a mother. What do you think?
Yeah, no, totally. And I think there's a lot of stuff like just in the kind of career in the workplace that is all about just kind of going like 24/7, gung-ho, got to keep going, got to keep getting promoted, you've got to keep doing all these things. And so that the moment someone puts the brakes on anywhere, if you look culturally, like you say, like everything is a lot slower paced in France. Like it's a,
yeah.
People have their boundaries, they do their things. It's like, you don't need to be doing this, but there's this pressure on everybody to kind of like, if you don't get it first, then you're not going to get it at all. The thing that I impress upon myself now, again, is things like making sure I'm bringing value to clients. Like, not that I'm going to be the fastest or the first or the most innovative or the most this, that, and the other. Am I doing the job you need to do? And am I doing it well?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there is a race to kind of do everything. And again, I think that's half the reason most of our society is going through mental health crises right now.
You've been listening to the Fear Free Childbirth Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Alexia Leachman. Fear Free Childbirth is the online destination for women seeking to take the fear out of pregnancy, birth, and beyond, with fear clearance meditations, self-healing products and courses, professional training, and specialist programs for overcoming tocophobia.
And if you've enjoyed this episode, then check out the Fear-Free Childbirth Mamaship. It's a bit like Netflix, where you can binge on a boatload more of fear-free childbirth content to inspire you on the journey to motherhood and beyond. More interviews, more birth stories, more expert wisdom. Visit fearfreechildbirth.com to find out more.